Good morning, welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be focusing on a very famous perek in Shmuel Aleph. This is perek Yud Zayin, the 17th chapter of Shmuel Aleph, and this is the story of David and Goliath. This is a very long perek, so it's 58 psukim long. Just going to get a quick overview of it and one or two points to ponder in today's Nach Yomi. So we are back at battle. It seems that even though Shaul HaMelech was the king, it seems that it was not under full sovereignty of the Israelites. The Philistines were usually the overlord at the time, and the battles go backwards and forwards. So there's a new encampment of battle, and this is in a place called Socho, between Socho and Azeka, in a place called Ephes Domim. And so we have the Israelites on the one side, we have the Philistines on the other side. And what's unusual about this battle is that out from the Philistine camp emerges a man called, who's the Ish HaBenayim, the in-between man, and his name is Goliath. So we're told that he's exceedingly tall. By some measurements, and today's measurements are 12 foot. We're talking about a really large man, and the Tanakh goes to great description to describe his armament and how he's covered from foot to toe from head to foot in all types of armament. The man is clearly protected. He has a spear. He has somebody who comes to accompany him with extra weapons. He has a large spear, a shield. I mean, we're talking about a person who's clearly a terrifying prospect for any soldier. What he does is he gets up there and he says, "Look, why are you waging war with us? I'm a regular Jew. I'm a regular Philistine. You know, you can make a choice. You can serve Shaul, or you can fight. Or you can fight me. Meaning, send out somebody. Choose yourself somebody. We'll have a duel, a good fair duel, and whoever wins will decide the fate of the nation. So if I win, then you become slaves to us, the Philistines, and if you win, Then we will be subservient to you." And Eri heard this, Shaul heard this, and nobody went out. It is interesting, and Rashi points out, just as we're going by, as a point to note, is that it sounds like he's actually beckoning to the leader of the people. He's not saying anybody. He's saying anybody with a capital A. He knows, and what he's essentially doing is he's saying, "You, Israel, have made a mistake by following your little king. Let your little king come out and fight me, and we'll see who's really boss in this territory." And for whatever reason, Shaul HaMelech is not coming out. Shaul HaMelech does not go out to fight him. There's an indictment on Shaul. The longer this man carries on cursing, the worse it looks for Shaul HaMelech. That's important to bear in mind as we continue the story. Now, while this is happening, the camera pans from the battlefront all the way back to the beautiful sunny hills of Bethlehem. And in Beis Lechem Yehuda, Yishai is talking to his son, David. Yishai is older, and is already Zaken at this time. He's elderly. And his oldest three sons are now in battle with Shaul, and David HaMelech is staying at home with the sheep. But Yishai sends David to go bring lunch to his brothers and send them peace. And off David goes. While this is happening, This is really essentially the 40th day that this Philistine, this Goliath, has been doing his things. Every morning, every evening, he has been coming out and cursing Israel, what is called cursing Marochos Elokim Chaim. He's cursing essentially God, and nobody's putting out lifting a finger out of terror. So David, in the meantime, arrives at the camp, kind of unbeknownst. He doesn't really know what's going on, and he drops off the lunches, and he goes to and while this is happening, he hears this Ish HaBenayim coming up, this Goliath coming up, and David is shocked. David is completely shocked by this, and he, viscerally he responds and says, "How can this uncircumcised Philistine?" That's kind of the lowliest description Tanakh gives for this person. "How can this Plishti Ha'arel say such things about the nation of God, and nobody lifts a finger?" David is so shocked by this. So in the midst of this discussion, people say to him, "Well, you know that Shaul HaMelech has placed a big price on his head, that whoever will conquer, will fight this giant, will become immensely rich, will marry the king's daughter, and will be set free if they had any debt or prison sentence on them. And that's a really big price." And David HaMelech says, can you say that again? What's the person going to get exactly?" And while David's in the middle of this conversation, his older brother Eliav gets upset and he says, "David, what are you doing? Where did you leave your sheep? Where did you leave the mission you're supposed to be doing? What are you doing here? David HaMelech ignores his older brother and says to the guy, "Just tell me again what it is." And he gets confirmation about the prize that Shaul has offered, and off he runs. He goes to Shaul HaMelech. He says, "Shaul, why are you letting this man, this giant, say this?" And Shaul says, "Look, you are not going to be able to fight this man. You're a shepherd boy. You're a small looking fellow. You're not a warrior. Don't get involved." David says, "Shaul, you may not know this, but when I was a shepherd, you know, one of the sheep was attacked by a lion and a bear, and I single-handedly chased it down and killed it. And as Hashem protected me from that terrifying predator, Hashem will protect me from this Philistine." And for some reason, Shaul sees in the passion, in the commitment, and the fierceness of David's voice that David HaMelech is serious about what he means. And he says, "Go for it." And he gives David HaMelech his clothes. miraculously, before Shem point out, the clothes shrink to fit David. But David HaMelech actually decides not to. They try to put the sword of Shaul on him, but the sword, David HaMelech says, "I'm not going to take a sword." He takes all of the armor, he takes off the sword, and he just takes his shepherd stick and his slingshot. And as he's going down to the valley where he's going to meet Goliath, he picks up five stones, which he finds on the floor of the valley there. As he goes down, you can imagine, I mean, we talk about a monster. This man is huge, and he sees this little boy coming without any form of weapon, overt weapon. And he is actually insulted. He says, "Hakelav anochi ki ata bo elai b'maklos," "I'm a dog that you come to me with sticks." Meaning, he's insulted that this is the person who they chose to send. And he says, I'm going to feed you to the birds of the heavens." And the psychological battle is very clear. David HaMelech responds in equal vehemence. And he says, "I'm coming to you, not with a weapon, but with the name of Hashem of the legions, which you cursed. I'm going to show you, Hashem's going to let me kill you today. I'm going to remove your head and feed you to the birds of the heavens." What a statement. As Goliath hears this, he starts approaching David. David runs to meet him. And as he runs, he slings a stone which penetrates the forehead of Goliath, going straight through the bone. Goliath falls forward. David HaMelech jumps onto him and takes out his sword, Goliath's own sword, and slices off his head. I mean, it's a fast battle. It's a very, very momentous moment, a triumphant moment that occurs over here. And David HaMelech immediately takes the head. All of the Israelite army see that the Philistine has fallen. They shout, they join the battle, and they pursue the Philistines and destroy many of the Philistines. And David HaMelech, in the meantime, returns with the head of Goliath and to Jerusalem, to Nov. And that's why Goliath's sword is going to be left there later on. We'll see it importantly. As this is all happening, Shaul is seeing this all happen, and he says to Avner, "Who is that? Who's this boy? Ben mi hai elema hanarazeh Avner." And Avner says, I have no idea. And he says, please try to find out who he is." In the meantime, David HaMelech comes back. He has the head of this Philistine, and Shaul says, "Who son are you?" And David HaMelech responds, "I'm the son of Yishai." Just a few quick points to think about over here, and that is the following: why would Shaul put such high stakes on this? On the winning this battle? I mean, his daughter, a lot of riches, you know, the king's pardon. Why? So it's clear that Shaul is very, very much at threat. He's very much backed into a corner because he should be out on that battlefield. So he tries to enrich enrich that person in the best way possible. The Gemara actually criticizes him for this. The Gemara says in Tanis Daf Dalet that how was he to know who was going to come out on the other side and marry his daughter? It was a dangerous thing to do. Hashem helped him; it was the right person, but it wasn't such a wise thing, the Gemara says, to be doing. Why is David HaMelech doing this? So the Mefarshim actually debate this. The Malbim says that when he was asking about the reward, he wasn't saying, "Oh, I want all that." What David HaMelech was saying is, "Why would anybody need that? This man is cursing God. How could he curse God?" That's what David HaMelech was saying. Like, why are you waiting for a reward? That's what David HaMelech was saying. Complete altruism. Whereas the Ralbag says, no, maybe there might have been a little bit more of a plan over here. David HaMelech says, "You mean the daughter of the king? David HaMelech knows he is the anointed king. He knows that he's going to take Shaul's place somehow, some way. And now he sees in front of him the opportunity of becoming part of the king's blood, the king's family, by marrying his daughter. So David HaMelech says, maybe this is also a worthwhile opportunity. So there's the level of altruism is debated between the Malbim and the Ralbag in this particular instance. Worthwhile thinking later on is how active David HaMelech is going to be in finding his own crown. As we go further into this parak, just one or two other points to notice over here is that at the end of the parak, Shaul asks, who is this child? Who's this young man? And like, we know that Shaul knows who he is. He loves him. He made him his arms carrier as of the last parak. He is he the court musician. What's going on over here? What is Shaul really asking? So we end with a Rashi who quotes a startling Gemara and Midrash, which says that what Shaul HaMelech was noticing over here was for the first time is that David HaMelech is acting in a very powerful and dangerous way. This sounds like somebody and looks like somebody who has the airs of a king. And Shaul HaMelech knows that he's going to be deposed of and going to be replaced. And he starts worrying, is my musician more than just a musician? And that's why he says, who is this the son of? Is this the son? Does this come from the dynasty of Peretz or Zerach, the two children of Tamar and Yehuda? Meaning to say, which part of the dynasty is he coming from? Because if he comes from Peretz, then I know that he is all kingly material and he's to be worried about. Avner responds, I don't know. So the Gemara inserts another part of the conversation here, which was there's actually a vociferous debate in the Beis Medrash that Doeg HaAdomi inserts. We're going to see him a little bit later on as to the legitimacy of David's birth because he comes from Rus HaMoaviyah. And his credentials are reestablished at this point. But this is the matter over here. The question that Shaul HaMelech is really asking is, really, is this person somebody to be feared? And we're going to see that this question is pivotal in the next chapter as to Shaul's perspective on who David HaMelech is. There is one last thing I'd like to mention, and that is there is a book called David and Goliath, which is written by Malcolm Gladwell, it starts off in this particular chapter, in which he argues in a particular way that Goliath was actually a goner. He didn't realize that if he'd known that David was a slinger, he would have run away from this battle because he was infantry, and infantry can't stand up in front of a slinger. Fascinating theory, but journalists should stick to journalism and Bible scholars should stick to Torah learning. And so if anybody's interested, there is a share I gave on this to refute such a claim and to read the Tanakh in the eyes of Tanakh, not in the eyes of the 21st century. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.